Hello and welcome to Smarter, a podcast by clinicians for clinicians and brought to you by Mater, an Australian leader in healthcare for more than a century. My name is Glenn Minturn and I'm excited to join you as we meet some of our clinicians and deep dive into specialty areas from across Mackay and Townsville. Today, I'm coming to you from Yuiburra, the land on which this podcast is recorded. And today, I'm excited as we recognise Endometriosis Awareness Month to be joined by Dr. Nagesh Gonika, obstetrician and gynaecologist at Mater Private Hospital, Mackay. With more than 25 years medical experience, Dr. Gonika has special interests in minimally invasive gynaecology, fertility and women's ultrasonography. He completed his specialist training at the Women's and Children's Hospital in Adelaide and worked as a specialist obstetrician and gynaecologist in Adelaide before moving to Mackay with his family. Today, he's joining us to talk about the detection and effective treatment of endometriosis.
We are Mater.
We are Mater.
We are Mater.
This is Smarter.
Nagesh, why is it that it does take so long for a majority of women to be diagnosed with endometriosis?
That's such an important and relevant question, Glenn, that women are used to pain and we somehow inherently expect that there will be some period-like pain and women accept that as part of normality. But pain cannot be quantified across individuals. It's a very personal perception. So you cannot say that this pain is acceptable and that pain is not. And where does that line lie? So often people accept that as normality. Another factor is that endometriosis sometimes runs in the family. So they say, well, my mother also had quite severe period pain, so I'm going to just, you know, grin and bear and put up with it. So there is a large amount of, I wouldn't want to use the word ignorance, but lack of awareness of that there is a condition called endometriosis that could be the reason for those symptoms, and then subsequently they manifest as different other symptoms that come out from there. You start having it affecting the quality of life. You can start having missed days at school, missed days at work. That impacts mental health. That creates fatigue. That creates anxiety, depression. So you have a wide variety of symptoms that come from endometriosis. But the acceptance that it can be related to something biological, the penny drops a lot later. And that's the experience if you look at the data that's available.
Endometriosis Australia has revealed more than 14% of Australian women live with endometriosis at some stage in their life, but the average amount of time it takes for it to be diagnosed is 6.5 years.
Yes. What sort of age are you starting to look at for symptoms of endometriosis?
So endometriosis is a condition that can occur from puberty to menopause. So it's the entire reproductive career of a woman, and we can call them children, but they are women in a sense from a biological perspective. And once they start having ovulation, once they start having menstruation, they can have endometriosis. Endometriosis is a very interesting relationship, a very intimate relationship with estrogen. And estrogen is a female hormone that's comes into its own with ovulation, which is the release of the egg. And that's where the whole story starts when it comes to endometriosis.
So some of those early symptoms, what are they? And are there additional tests that can be done that maybe can help diagnose where the ladies sit?
Absolutely. The symptoms mostly are period pain. The period pain that lasts before, during and after the periods. That's called triple dysmenorrhea. That can be a condition that is quite classically described, but not all will have that. So, and as I said, period pain or pain is a personal perception. So how do you say that this is way beyond normality? It depends on each individual's pain threshold. I'm of the belief that women have much higher pain thresholds than men because of what they're coming in for, and that's natural or evolution. But the downside of that is that they put up with a lot.
Yes.
And they manifest that much later in the piece. Coming to tests that we can do to diagnose endometriosis, the cardinal test is a very targeted, focused ultrasound. A lot of times an ultrasound would come back as normal because they're looking only at the uterus, the ovaries, and saying, oh, it looks normal, the normal ovaries, normal uterus, so it should not have any dramas. What we call normal on imaging doesn't necessarily be normal from an endometriosis perspective, because you will not see subtle degrees of endometriosis that is present. You will also not see certain features that are a part of a dynamic testing, which is basically the operator dependent part of testing for endometriosis. So I truly believe that ultrasound for endometriosis needs to be done by a very specialized individual trained for that purpose, for looking at those subtle signs. Because if you're only looking at the images, you will miss a lot of them. The ultrasound is very good at diagnosing endometriosis if it involves the ovaries, but that can be a much later manifestation. So ultrasound is a basic investigation. Laparoscopy remains the gold standard.
Are there long-term impacts, let's say if treatment begins 5 years rather than 10 years after diagnosis?
That's another fantastic question, but it is very hard to tell you, isn't it? Because you would not know when did the endometriosis start.
Yeah.
But we often see that endometriosis symptoms and endometriosis disease is not always proportional to each other. So each journey is different. Do I propose that every patient that comes with period pain should be put through a laparoscopy? No, not really. We need to look at it in a very individualized manner, a very targeted manner. What's the symptoms? How much is it affecting the quality of life?
So I guess that brings me to the next question. What is the impact of endometriosis, particularly on pregnancy?
Mm-hmm. Endometriosis and pregnancy have an interesting relationship. You know, the standard teaching was that pregnancy is a good cure for endometriosis. Because as we talked about earlier, that it's the ovulation and the rise in estrogen that pretty much feeds endometriosis. So when you have this pregnancy, you have 9 months of a holiday for endometriosis.
Yes.
And if you then go on to breastfeed, another 6 months of lactation, which then gives a 15-month good holiday. And that will lead to a lot of atrophy of endometriosis or active endometriotic lesions. And that could pretty much cure people to a quality of life that is acceptable. But on the other side, on the flip side, endometriosis make it harder to get pregnant. So you have something that you'd like to treat with a pregnancy, if I can say that. But at the other side, it's harder to get pregnant. So you have to work on all sorts of interventions to say what's right for the patient and where they are in their journey, to say where do we go from here to make them achieve the goal that they are setting for themselves. So is it a better quality of life, a less painful period, a less painful intercourse, or is it targeted towards having a baby?
The ABC reported it could take 7 to 12 years for a woman to be diagnosed with endometriosis due to barriers in accessing specialist care or dismissals from clinicians due to minimal or broad symptoms. The report also cited a University of Queensland study that revealed 40% of women with endometriosis require fertility treatment to assist in having children.
So Nagesh, in your experience, have you seen pregnancy either lessen or worsen the symptoms of endometriosis?
Absolutely. Pregnancy does give endometriosis a long holiday. So endometriosis is generally exacerbated by a menstrual period. So when pregnancy gives you 9 months of no periods, followed by lactation, breastfeeding, which leads to another maybe 6-12 months, you could get a good holiday from endometriosis being fed. And as a result, some of it will regress. Sometimes even they might become symptom free, and that's
is that common?
Fairly common, yes, but it does, as we talked earlier, it becomes harder to get pregnant, so it's not an easy solution in that regard.
So if it was to see the symptoms disappear, is that forever? Is there a possibility that they could come back later on in time?
The data suggests that 30% of endometriosis would recur. And I think that's even underrated, because how often do we know it's come back until you put a telescope and have a look?
Sure.
So that's basically the nature of the beast. So we have to look at endometriosis as an entire journey from puberty to menopause. And some of the symptoms will not even disappear after menopause. So you have this extended spectrum of disease that is manifested over extended period of time with its ups and downs, and you have to therefore tailor the treatment to where the target is, or where the goal of that patient is. For some part of that treatment, it might be symptom relief. Another part, it might be enhancing their fertility.
Are there instances where you've seen patients who've been, or even had to have, a completely frozen pelvis to be able to fall pregnant?
Absolutely. There's an amazing patient, and I just think that the degree of pain threshold they would have, that they present to you when the pelvis is completely frozen with the disease, with active disease and scar tissue. So that's long-standing endometriosis. So I had a patient like that who had a completely frozen pelvis, and we were debating as to how do we go about it, and she was very keen on having babies. So we had a long discussion with her, myself and a colorectal surgeon, and we then went in to do a laparoscopy, but we decided that we will do surgery, a minimal surgery, to optimize fertility, because that was her main goal.
Yep.
And interestingly, after 5 tries of trying naturally, and we pinpointing when she was ovulating, she fell pregnant with follicle tracking and just ultrasound. So it was amazing, because most of these patients end up needing much higher level of interventions. And it was amazing to see that she succeeded. She subsequently came back to me after having that baby. Of course, we delivered that baby. But after having the baby, she came back saying, I need to have another child. And the story was again the same. And we said, okay. We tried naturally for a few months with no success. We then went in, had a look at the pelvis, again did very minimal intervention to free up the tubes, to free up the ovary, but did not try to do anything heroic, because that would have involved taking pieces of the bowel out, which can have its own morbidity. Amazingly, she fell pregnant again without needing interventions like IVF. So it's very rewarding, and she's very, very happy. Her symptoms after the pregnancy have been minimal, although her disease is quite massive.
The Australian Disease Expenditure Study showed that in the 2020-2021 financial year, an estimated $247.2 million was spent on endometriosis in the Australian health system. That covered everything from public and private hospital admissions and services to pathology and GP services and PBS expenditure. But the cost of the disease is not just financial. It also affects people's ability to work or do the activities they enjoy, leading to the total estimated economic burden of endometriosis in Australia to be $9.7 billion annually.
So Nagesh, it is Endometriosis Awareness Month. What is the message that you have for the medical community when it comes to diagnosis and treatment of this condition?
I think that the thing which is an ongoing struggle, but also something that we should be doing, is to recognize that endometriosis is real, and endometriosis is a condition. Although it is a benign condition, it's not a cancer, it is robbing women of their potential. And if we can understand that aspect, I think the rest of it falls in place. Now, that applies to a young child, I wouldn't call them a child, but a young adolescent that is just getting into the puberty, where schoolwork can be affected, their social life can be affected.
Yes.
As they grow up, they are the impact that endometriosis has on their reproductive life, their sex life. It is a major impact to the person sitting across from you.
Probably one of the real keys is in the title, awareness. It is something Absolutely. That's so important, awareness. Now, gynecology and fertility, it's a bit of a family affair for you and your wife, Dr. Sally Rodriguez. What does it mean to be able to provide those services that between you, you're able to put out there to Mackay and the Whitsundays region together?
When you said a family affair, I just feel affair and a family doesn't go in the same sentence. But jokes aside, it is truly a family for me. The workplace, we've been here for a good 18 years. And we invite them into our family every time they come in to see us. And myself and my wife, Sally Rodriguez, she's... of course, she's the boss, and she is very much cardinal to the practice. We provide a service that we can deliver the best to every couple, every family that come and see us for it. And the journey, we've been part of 6,000 babies being delivered in Mackay. I couldn't ask for anything more. That these are 6,000 families that have partnered with us in their most intimate journeys, their most aspirational goals of life. And I think they are part of our family for good. So it is truly a family journey for me.
Fascinating stuff. But right now, we're going to find out a little bit more about you in a segment we like to call The Checkup. So, Nagesh, in this segment, we get to find out a little bit more about you, the person, Nagesh, the person, as opposed to Nagesh, the medical professional. I've got a number of quick fire questions. I'm going to throw them at you. I don't want you to think too hard about the answer. First answer that comes to your mind is probably the best one when it comes to this. Are you ready to go?
Let's go.
All right. Question number one. How do you unwind or relax?
Well, music is my therapy. So, yeah, I'm totally...
Do you play?
No, I sing. Sing. I sing. I train. I train into classical music, Indian classical music, but I also sing Western music at the Stedford, at the conservatorium.
Fantastic.
Yes.
Do you sing in the surgery?
Yes, I do.
You
actually,
do?
Some of my colleagues in the surgery said that the surgery does go much better when we are singing. That's, I like to believe that.
Well, tying us into the next question, do you have a theatre playlist? Is there a set of a group of songs that you like to listen to in the surgery?
They have to listen to my voice, you know.
Not a bad thing by the sound of it. Can you give me an idea? What TV show best portrays your profession, do you think? Oh. Is there one?
I've gone off TV because that's the agenda on that is just take you away from what you want to achieve. I'd like to talk about books. There's a beautiful book by Adam Kay. He talks about It's Going to Hurt. It's a journey of a young doctor, an obstetrician, that went through the NHS. And it's a wonderful journey. And there was a documentary on that. I think that's the TV we would like to see.
Absolutely. Have you ever had to deal with a medical emergency when you haven't been working?
I've came very close to one when I was flying, and usually when they ask, you know, is there a doctor in the passenger list, I try to pretend that I'm sleeping because I say, oh, no, I'm an obstetrician. What can I do with a heart attack, you know? And I suddenly found that there was once a pregnant patient, and
goodness
I said,
me.
My goodness. But luckily, we were lucky to get her to the next destination before she could do something drastic up in the air at 30,000 feet, I guess. So.
Would certainly be one to write your own book about.
Absolutely.
And just finally, do you have any superstitions?
Not really. I try to stay away from superstitions because I think that they can sway on your life, because they can start, you know, you start believing them. It's interesting how they play on your mind. It's life is a mind game, and I think you need to just learn to play it on your turf and on your terms. If you try to get sucked into other superstitious stuff, I think God save you.
Great answer. Nagesh, thank you so much for joining us on Smarter.
Thank you. Thank you, Glenn.
For our listeners at home, in the car, or having a well-deserved break between patients, thank you so much for tuning in today. We'll see you next time on Smarter.